Hello. Hello, Jared. Nice to have you here on the Generalists.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Tell us a little bit about yourself, as I think, you're the best to describe yourself and what you do.
Sure. At the moment, I'm the lead creature effects artist at a studio here in London. And I am in charge of all things feathery, furry, fatty, and skin rolly for all creatures and characters that we put through our visual effects pipeline.
Awesome. Would you say creature effects? Is that CFX short?
That's the effects,
Yeah.
Also known as technical animation, also known as creature 2D. It's got a wild thing, but it's moving now towards a dedicated CFX naming.
Oh, I got it. Would you say it's a role that is new, kind of?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I
Also.
think, yeah, my first sort of foray into the field, it was a weird field, right? It was either handled by effects or it was handled by rigging. And effects guys don't like it, riggers don't like it. And the work wasn't really, there wasn't enough of it to designate a whole team to it, really. It was kind of always like a side thing or like a technical achievement or something like that. But it's only really in the past, I'd say 8 or 9 years, where studios have been able to develop dedicated creature effects departments. And when I started about 9 years ago doing that, creature effects was not really a thing. Like it was, there was only a few small studios, and then slowly, 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 it's growing up. And now you've got boutique studios with, one animator, one rigger, one CFX guy now. So it's quite cool to see.
Wow. Okay, so before it wasn't so common to have a CFX artist, and you mentioned that it's something that riggers don't enjoy, visual effects artists also don't enjoy. But I wonder, like, why was it not part of the industry? Do you think like computers were not there yet for all the simulation work and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it's what we wanted to do with it, right? Like it's like I guess it's like, as you know, like in visual effects, everyone's kind of doing lots of different pieces of this pie, right? And so it's just like when that slice suddenly becomes big enough to to say, oh, okay, we should actually pay someone full time. There's enough work to actually give this to someone full time. That's probably where that shift happened. Like before, I think you could kind of fold it into effects artist work, or you could fold it into a rigger's work or something like that. But when that workload just grew and grew, I mean, you look at how many digital characters we have in films now, right? You have, from being like, you talk about like Gollum or Jar Jar or something like that, headline creating like this character is digital, isn't this crazy? To now, you've got like entire casts that are digital and no one blinks an eye. We're all just so used to it. We're just so oversaturated by it now. So I think the work itself has dictated the demand for the department, which is always very exciting for us.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that the demand got much higher. That's why, like, but would you say that it got explored more recently? Like, the more you do it, of course, the better you get at it. But I would imagine the scene to be super small, right? Like, how do you improve your skills?
That's a really good question. I think that the number one sort of thing that holds everyone back on all projects is time, right? Like it's like that famous saying, like it's never done, it's just due, right? So I think like once you start having people that are dedicated to just doing that, you get time and opportunity to explore different ways of working out these things. And you could, whereas before it was maybe just a case of like, okay, we need to get this done. What's one way to do it? Does it work? Yes, go. Like we're now sort of, we've got a lot more breathing room in terms of like, oh, we can try something out, see what works and doesn't work. It is a very small community. Like the creature effects community is pretty small. Once you work with a couple of people, you start seeing them bounce around the same sort of places, which is very cool. But what's also cool is I think like the software itself is sort of starting to pick up that creature effects is growing thing. Like Houdini's latest like development demos when they're releasing Houdini 20 basically was a creature effects showcase, right? They're like, we've redone muscles, we've redone hair, we've redone feathers, we've redone skin, go nuts. Like here's a whole pipeline for you guys ready to go. So that's always quite cool to see. I think it's just, I don't know, you sort of, you know, you give something a go and you work out what you liked and you didn't like, and you try and take what you did like into another project. And then, of course, you get someone new on that project who says, well, we actually did it like this. And I don't know, I don't think I've ever done the same projects twice the same way. You always just take pieces of what you've learned in the past. The best thing is when you get someone come in that's new and you say, oh, we want to do it like this. And they said, actually, we tried that and it was horrible. It went really badly because of these reasons. It's like, oh, thank you very much, previous studio. That saved us a lot of money. So, yeah.
So how is it with you know, since this area of work has not been explored as much as like visual effects have been, and or forgiving as much as visual effects are. Like a destruction, you might, you know, it's a bit more forgiving. Fire is a bit more forgiving. It kind of looks like fire, feels like fire. You're kind of good to go. Like it doesn't have to be every like hair of the facial expression should like. It's I would assume it's not so forgiving. So how? Matt, what I wanted to initially ask is like, how is it with budgeting and experimenting? That must be
Tricky.
tricky, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. Yeah, because I think what you just have to do is like, I've always found that we kind of have to try and like wedge ourselves and then create as much room as possible, right? It's like you want to get involved in other departments as quickly as possible, right? Like the worst thing you can have is like someone builds a model and then they get signed off and then it goes through like rigging, animation, then it gets to you and you want to make model changes. Like, oh, actually that doesn't work for what we want to do. And they say, well, tough, the model signed off, right? So you want to get involved in assets straight away. You want to get involved in rigging straight away. You want to get very involved in animation straight away. And of course, you don't want to tell animators how to animate. That's not our job at all. But you want to sort of maybe suggest that maybe this particular choice is going to make life very, very difficult for us. Could we maybe do it a slightly different way? And you know, everyone knows we're on the same team, so it's become very, it's a nice sort of community working that way, I think.
I'm now very curious to know, like, what do you need from the asset makers, differently for the creature, elements that you need to add? Like, if you could explain to us, because when the first time I heard creature artist or creature visual effects artist, I was like, yeah, that's a person who takes it all the way through asset creation, all the way to the simulation. So, can you explain to me and to the viewers, like, what is it exactly that the asset creator has to look for to make your life
Yeah,
easier?
so for example, like let's go from like a model point of view, right? So we model like your final production model, very high resolution, super detailed, everything like that. If I get that and I make a sim out of it, I'm going to be simming for millions of years because of the amount of data that I have to sort of churn through and everything like that. We're just not there yet. So what we usually do is we want to create simulation meshes, so the lower resolution versions of that object, right? And so what's handy is like, yeah, we could do that ourselves, but you want that to follow the animation cache exactly. You maybe want it to be doing certain things in the animation cache as well. So you might want to say to the modeling guys, right, hey, can you also spit out like a lower resolution model with the following changes? Give those to the rigger to get skinned up to move in a certain way so that when you get it with the animation cache, you've got a really complementary mesh that you don't then have to spend all your time trying to recreate from scratch, right? Whereas like a modeler is always going to do it better, an animator is always going to do it better, and a rig is always going to do it better than what we can do in just a couple of days. So if they can do all that groundwork for you, and you've also had the conversation between departments on, you know, what that looks like coming in, things like that, like also in animation as well, it's like it's really important for us to get a good pre-roll for a shot. So for example, if you have a character running in, and the first frame of that shot is like a nice run pose. I might get the cloth in a T-bind pose from modeling, right? The high-res cloth. And I don't want to have to sculpt that into position. What I want is like in the animator, 30 frames before the start frame, I want them to hold that in a T pose and then slowly move it into their start pose, so that it sort of guides the cloth into a starting position. And so it's like just trying to, you know, explain that to other departments. Once they understand like what kind of impact that has on us and the enormous time savings that we get, you know, I run them through it. I buy them a couple of beers and some chocolates, and suddenly I have a much easier time on a production. It's been really good to work that way.
So crazy how many principles you need to know in order to just like create the effects you want to create. Like when you're talking about clothes, I'm like, so you basically need to know rigging, you need to know baking, you need to know clothes simulation, and basic like knowledge about 3D modeling and basic knowledge about I don't know, computer science, I guess. You
A
know?
little bit, yeah. It's sort of interesting, right? Because you don't have to have this encyclopedic knowledge of the whole thing, because it's not just technical knowledge, right? You're also creating like an actual creative shot of something, so you also need the creative eye. You want to have some sort of
True.
input, and you also want to be just nice to work with. So you want to be communicable and professional, and so that's really hard to do. So of course, no one is all of those things, but you do, but. What I really love about creature effects teams is that people tend to lean one way or the other, right? Like I can have very, very technically capable Houdini artists, right? Like people that just deep dive Houdini and that is their jam. This is like great, I can use you. I can have really sort of animation minded people, really creative. They can sort of see the shot, they're putting in ideas. They're more than happy to go in and really sculpt things as well, like, get some real sort of keyframe stuff going. And then you've also got people that don't know any of that stuff, but they're from like a material engineering background. So they just know cloth properties, they know material properties. And so then they just, especially because these simulation engines are built to simulate real world materials, suddenly you give someone who's never done a cloth sim before, but from an engineering background, these settings, like you can have fantastic setups very, very, very quickly. So yeah, what you want is like, for anyone interested in creature effects and thinking, oh, I don't know rigging, but I do know anim, or oh, I really love Houdini, but I don't know, simulation work. It's like, well, there's a slice of that pie for everyone in a well-rounded team. Yeah.
But it takes like a good leader, I feel, to connect the dots there, you know? And I think that's
Yeah.
what you do, right? You're a lead CFX.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and
So, yeah.
I think that's my slice of the pie at the moment, is that yeah, I need someone to wrangle everything, and I've really enjoyed that side. I've been very, very lucky to work with really, really talented people.
Awesome.
So it's been really a great opportunity.
Yeah, and it's its own skill set, I feel, leadership and
Yeah,
being able
I
to
think
lead.
so. I think because you've got to really like. I mean, you're there to make the studio a product, right? So it's
True.
just like that is the goal. So you have to sort of take that into account. You have to protect your artists as well. You can't just like throw 100 hours of work or something and say do it in 20. Like that's not right.
Yeah.
And it's also like managing the same demands over every other department that's looking at you and your team and saying, when is this done? Why isn't this working?
True.
Just kind of putting a smile on your face and saying, right, let's fix this. So
But
yeah.
that sounds like a lot of communication and like within the team that you're leading and also with other teams, like where do you find the time to work? If it's all meeting and if it's all communication, when do you get to do the work?
I think honestly, like the average that I've seen is like the morning meetings are kind of unmissable, right? Like they can be really productive as well. Like so it's you get an opportunity to show what was done from the previous day. You can look at other departments and everything like that. So but the mornings are kind of a write-off, right? That's sort of first few hours in the morning. And then of course like once you especially like once you've got a big team, you've got like briefings to do. You want to make sure that everyone's set up to work. By the time everyone's like ready to go, it's like lunch. But it's the afternoons. Like that tends to be like when everyone like knows what they want to do, they've got everything set up from the morning, and now it's just like, right, get a coffee, stick your head down, and I'll see you at 5. So yeah.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting because a
Yeah.
lot of, like in the games industry at least, meetings can be in the morning, can be in the afternoon, can be all the time.
Yeah.
And like
Yeah.
the typical artist problem is that yeah, I don't know, where I can do my work, and so most of them just do it on the weekend. Just like meeting after
Right.
meeting after meeting. I feel like that's also the leadership
Yeah.
at fault. as well. Yeah.
I mean, what I've done in the past and what I've seen done is people literally just get their phones on the desks and with a bunch of different timers, right? It's just
Oh.
like how long are you spending in meetings trying to work, like technical issues, trying to load issues, versus the actual shop work. And you know, some places can be really bad, like maybe a quarter of your week spent actually working.
Wow.
But other places, like you know, where, and then what's really nice about that is once you show that data, you can just say like, "Hey, this is a big problem,"
Yeah.
and it's usually only a very big problem for a very short amount of time. Maybe that's a good thing about visual effects because the projects are only going to be 6 months or something. Like you have
Oh.
to get this stuff done. So
6 months only. This is crazy. Like when I think about
yeah.
a movie or something like that, I'm thinking about 3 years
Yeah.
of work, but if it's just 6 months,
I mean,
that's
it sort of
insane.
depends on the film, right? Like, for
Yeah.
example, like Mufasa recently came out. That was, oh gosh, I think overall that was like 4 or 5 years of development, I think. And that was off the
Wow.
back of like another film being developed for like 6 years.
Yeah,
So,
but that's all creatures, right?
yeah,
Basically, yeah.
yeah, yeah. It's entirely CG. Yeah.
Have you worked on those, or do you know people who
Yeah,
worked on
yeah, yeah.
those? Yeah. How
Yeah,
was
so
that like?
I was very lucky to start leading. I was only unfortunately on the project for a couple of months before I left the studio. But it was a really, really good team. A tiny team compared to the first one. That's the crazy thing.
Crazy.
Like that was sort of the biggest thing I've sort of seen is like these sort of project lengths and everything are just getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Like for example, like Lion King 1, the creature effects team was about like 60 something people, I think. That was just in
Wow.
the London office.
Yeah.
And then for Lion King 2, I think we started off with like 7. So
What?
it was a huge difference. Yeah, they did an incredible, incredible amount of work considering all the restrictions on that. Yeah.
Wow. And so as a creature artist, you're taking what the modelers have done. Do you take that first, or do you take the animation first? Because you have to build all the muscles, right? What do you have to do? Maybe
Yeah.
explain it to us. I'm not an expert.
No, that's right. I mean, so it depends, right? Again, like it depends on what the budget and the scale of the show is, and also like what we want to achieve, right? Like, so for example, something like the scale of The Lion King, yes, you have like a muscle simulation set up where you have all the muscles defined and you have like
Wow.
skin slide and everything like that. So that's a significant amount of work, a huge amount of work. But it has a huge payoff, right? So it's
True.
very, very satisfying. But sometimes, like for example, we worked on the Prehistoric Planet series as well, and that was a TV series about digital dinosaurs, and that was by far like a huge number of shots more because it was a whole TV series, and it was only done in I think about a year and a half. So we had like serious time constraints. So as much as you want to simulate muscles, you can't, but the brief still has make it look like it has muscles, right? So suddenly you have to think about like, right, if I can't actually simulate muscle bodies, how do I cheat it, basically? And so there's your Houdini guys that want to come in, right? Like now you need to create like a skin fin that looks like it's sliding over muscle. How do you do that?
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like really fun points, and you basically what you want to do is you want to give your team as much time as possible to answer those questions in like a one setup to kind of rule them all, and then with a couple of test shots. And if it tends to work on those generally, then it's just like, okay, once we actually get these sequences, just run it through and see what we get, right? Like maybe it
Yeah.
goes through first time. Most likely not. But you know, if it
Yeah.
goes through, great. If it doesn't, like, is it the setup that needs to change, or is the setup fine? Maybe we just need to do a little bit of shot work, like paint this out, make this a little tighter, and move through that. So that's generally how it works. So we start off any show with a creature effects rig, and that could be any number of things from a very simple jiggle on a piece of hair to a full-fledged character,
Yeah.
all the way, you know. Once you get that approved on a couple of test shots, then you can start running that on animation. So basically, while animation will tend to start a little bit later after assets, they're always sort of brought in first, the modelers, and then the riggers are brought in. You want to be involved in that already because you want to be building your own rigs.
course.
And then once animation get their stuff, they want to do a couple of tests, try and get the feel for the characters in the show. And then, of course, once they start spitting stuff out, you want to grab that as quickly as possible and start running your work on there as well and sort of get a taste for how they're working and see what sort of assets you're going to be getting over the course of the show. So
basically, it's smarter to have a whole production cycle on something small at the beginning.
Yeah.
And to basically to troubleshoot what's going wrong, where we can improve. And this will all go into time estimation. And to know also if you have the right people on the team, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So what will happen is like you usually have like a skeleton crew of fairly senior people that are going to be making these setups.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're exactly right. Like, okay, you've got a production with 2,000 shots in it. Great. Get one through as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
Like it's going to go very wrong a lot of the ways along the way, right? Like even after us, like I've got to give that to lighting. You know, I could have missing parameters, materials go missing, UVs break. Like, who knows what I've broken along the way? That's got to be a whole consideration as well.
So, like, fail forward fast.
Yeah.
At the start.
Yeah, fail forward often. Yeah. 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 Every single day. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still like make mistakes after like all those?
Oh
years?
Yeah.
All the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, big times. And like, you know, like mistakes that are like. That's the job is to continually like I guess like make a mistake. Like you want to sort of like show it, this is wrong, okay, I'm gonna go back. Like that's the job, right?
Mm.
But man, I've made some like whopping mistakes like that, you know, could have been very expensive and thankfully haven't been. Yeah, absolutely to this day. Yeah,
what helped you like get away from that trouble of making it expensive? Most of the times. Have you worked all night on it or thought about it? You couldn't sleep?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, like I've really put up some big barriers around like overtime, which is nice. I think that like overtime, I think, can be avoided as much as possible by kind of recognizing how much of a benefit it is to get the work done early, right? Mm. Like it's easy to say that, but I think like if you can make a case to the studio from like a production point of view, like how much money this is going to potentially save if we do it like this, then you can kind of like, you know, work your way through there. But I think avoiding the mistakes, I think is humility, like understanding that you've done something wrong as quickly as possible and getting a bit of a spotlight on it, like asking for help, that's totally fine. Like I've had like really ashen faced people like come up to me like, I'm so sorry, I've done this, that, the other. It's like, yeah, that's what it's like. I just answer them however I would like want to be answered to.
Exactly.
So much help.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like, you can't afford to get caught up in the rat race of getting this done as quickly as possible. That's where you make mistakes, right? It's just like, well, just slow down. Like let the superiors take the heat of like when stuff has to be done. Is this done? Is it not? Like just isolate the task down to a single thing. This kind of has to be done by this date. Just do that one thing.
Yeah. Low hanging fruits sometimes help by.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Ask for help and just take the time, take a step back. That's been.
But like even if you can't solve that one problem that maybe is 50% completed, at least in game dev, you go back to the problem that you solve 70% and you just do that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah. And sometimes like, yeah, exactly. Sometimes the answer is that it can't be done, right? Like what you want can't be done. We really, like as long as you tried and there's a good reason, that's fine. Like this industry, this is what we do, right? We pivot. Like, you know, in Houdini, you want to make a box. There's 100 different ways to make a box.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, we just do it in a different way. That's totally fine.
Yeah, and it's just like Houdini itself. When I think about Houdini, it's like the amount of skills you need to have, but also like even if you don't have those skills, you could still start right now. Like there are a lot of content out there right now. I guess the question is, if it was like 20 years ago or 15 years ago, you're starting from scratch right now.
Yeah.
What do you suggest people to do?
But yeah, so if I decided at like 18, I want to be a creature effects artist.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think I think the hard thing about that is, I think by the time you graduate, it's going to be slightly different. But I think honestly, it's like, I think it's just start doing projects. Like that's like you don't have to go to universities and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm going to be very careful about saying that because, like, for example, for myself, I was lucky to go to uni and I had like a generic kind of digital arts degree. Like there was no such thing as a visual effects degree when I was around. And I'd sort of piecemealed it together from computer science and graphic design rubbish. So, and it was sort of but I never once had my degree I guess referred to or anything like that when I was looking for jobs until I moved countries. Then I did need the degree, right? Like I worked in the industry for 10 years before I needed my degree, and I think like thank God I had it because I was able to come to the UK. Just with the and that wasn't the studios that wanted it, that was immigration. But I think like however you can do it, I think it's like just do project-based work that is small scale and finishable. That's the big thing, right? You have to get like some sort of finished product. And along the way, like when you're looking at something, you know, if the sim works, that's fine, but it like is that enough of a success, right? Like what are you doing with that sim? Like it's like if you didn't have to simulate this, if you just kind of imagined it in your head and it would look the way you want it to look visually, what would that look like, right? So it's just like okay, like the sim will never get you all the way. It'll give you a good base to then go in and start noodling around with what you want to start editing around. So I think with that in mind, as long as you sort of keep looking at yourself and be constructively critical about the work, like does this look like how I want it to look? I think you'll get there eventually. Yeah, I'd say yeah, a project-based approach is a really good one.
So if you to start like right now, 2025, I'm still stuck in 2024. In 2025, would you like do project based work? Would you go on YouTube? Would you go like buy courses?
I would do just YouTube. I think that's amazing, right? Like none of this stuff existed. I remember when Gnomon Workshop came out, right? This was a company that were making DVDs and mailing them around the world of like artists that were recording at home, right? Like, and they were sold out because that was the only thing around. Half of that, like that now, you can get a subscription for that, like $5 or something like that for a month. It's incredible. Sorry, that's not an ad. But like, even if you don't have the $5, like YouTube is amazing. You know, like you have all these people so openly like being able to deliver this stuff. There's huge communities, there's art station, there's all the there's lots of like game jams and stuff like that. Like the opportunity for learning without having to go through formal challenges, channels, and then being able to have almost a mentorship level exposure to this stuff is completely unheard of. Yeah, I'm extremely jealous of the information available now as opposed to back then.
Honestly, I wouldn't be jealous. And here's why. I feel like when you were starting to learn, you had no other option but, right, to do projects. You had that was the go-to. It was obvious. Nothing else was obvious. Like for me, living in this age, I'm like, the obvious thing is I buy a course. The obvious thing is I look on YouTube. Everything is available, right? Like you said. However, I never get to understand that I have to do my own project, because the obvious is all the tutorials. The obvious is
I
acquiring all
see.
of that, right? The obvious is like to get my credit card, pay this and pay that. The project aspect of it have never been how to say an obvious thing to me. And that's unfortunate, of course. Now I'm learning to create those good habits where I just do a project. I don't even need to stream it. I'm learning on the side. That's the downside of that.
No, I completely understand that. I think that's a really good point. And I guess like when I say project as well, like it could be It doesn't have to be like a finished game or short film. I
Yeah.
would advise highly against that, right? It's just like bouncing ball is fine. But yeah, you're right. I think like, yeah, do the tutorials, but then stop. Like maybe do a couple and then stop and take what you've learned and try and recreate something completely fresh, right?
Yeah.
That would be the big thing, because the even like the work we do, like say for example, recreating a digital character. Like you've got a filmed character, you've got to push him out of a plane, you're recreating him digitally. That should be bread and butter, right? Every single one is different. And the only thing you bring along with you is the concept, like of I want to be able to do this. Like, but how it's done changes every single show.
Wow, this is so interesting, and it also changes depending on the art style as well, right? I would imagine.
Oh yeah.
Because like not
Yeah,
every
yeah.
project is seeking realism.
No, that's right. I think you can, I don't know, I've been lucky to work in feature animation and in visual effects. And I think they're in a way like quite similar. Like I think whatever your medium is, whether it's something like Arcane or something like like a Marvel show, you just want it to be believable, right? So it has to act in a believable way. As if that's your goal, I think you're pretty okay for whatever you're doing.
It's interesting how you can simplify it like that, but it's always almost always more complicated than that. But if you can
Yeah.
simplify it like that, you could say the ultimate truth is that it needs to be believable. The emotion needs to be believable. If that's like I can see that is how you could sleep at night and say, Nick, tomorrow I will just make it believable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's the thing. If you've done that, like, that's what the audiences are there for, right? Like, they don't care about your Houdini scene or your render graphs or anything like that. They want to see a believable character. Yeah.
Would that like sometimes take more rendering time? I think rendering is does not get talked about that much. How much of the project is just rendering? Is it something you should be counting for?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, what you want is you want to give artists the ability to iterate on their work, right? That's a big thing.
Makes sense.
And so as soon as you want creature effects artists to iterate, that's where rendering comes in, especially with something like hair is a great example, or feathers. Because often, like in Houdini, I'm not looking at full geometry. I'm looking at representational geometry, props of geometry, or something low res. The renderer is taking that, and like more and more now as well, like we're not even caching out full res versions of our geometry and then rendering that. We're looking at render time geometry, so that geometry doesn't even exist until it's rendered, right? Like, so you have to render it to see your work. And then that's where like having some sort of like understanding of render times and everything is a big advantage. Thankfully, like at the larger studios, again, like they have whole departments dedicated to this, which is nice. But what you will tend to set up per department as well is like my creature effects renders, for example, don't look like the final shot, right? Like, so for example, if I'm doing clothing, I'm gonna make the body bright blue. I'm gonna make this shirt bright yellow, this shirt bright red. Because I want to see like what layers are intersecting with each other, right? Like if there's something popping through, I want a big fat spotlight right on there in my render to say like there it is. Like I don't really care about the final texture or anything like that. Like as long as I know that my geometry isn't warping in a weird way, I can just see that in lighting. That's fine. What I'm after is like a technical render. So that means I don't need my scene lights. I don't need, I maybe don't need any lights. I could just do it with like a environment light and then just like a basic ambient occlusion pass and then just skip that off. So that's very, very cheap. Now we've got like cheap renders of our stuff like coming
True.
right through and stuff like that. So yeah,
Wow,
that's always
it's
helpful.
so interesting how like there are a lot of approaches to get a fast render in and just for iteration, like you said, because
Yeah.
like in a studio where you're working on a big project, iteration is like the skill you want to look for in someone that you want to hire, right? It's the
Yeah,
number one thing.
absolutely. Yeah, there was a one studio I worked at, Animal Logic, and really incredible studio. They just built their own. Like they were so
Okay.
frustrated at, even though they were using like these really powerful renderers, they one guy was convinced he could make it faster, and he did. It was just incredible. And I think they use that rendering software still called Glimpse.
Okay. Wow. So they just made their own software. This is so
They just made
insane.
their own. Yeah, they have a huge R&D department. And yeah,
Wow.
that studio really stands up on its own.
And you worked with them?
I did. Yeah, I was lucky. I think I worked with them
Cool.
overall about 4 or 5 years, I think. That's where I got my start in Creature Effects.
Oh, I saw you didn't start like that since the beginning. You got into
Yeah,
it,
that's right.
right? Okay, so what's the
Yeah.
story? Let me know.
So yeah, basically I graduated basically at the start of like a financial crisis, like a world financial crash.
Yeah.
So like everything just died, right? Like I
Okay.
had all these big dreams of like, right, I'll work on games and films. Nope.
Nope.
Like that was the first things to go. So I ended up joining this like small local company, and we were doing like little characters that read out tweets and then trying to sell them back to the company. It was a bizarre
Okay.
like business model, but it worked. But
Okay.
that was really nice. It sort of exposed me, to the whole sort of pipeline, right? We wanted to model this character, rig it, animate it, render it, da, da,
Yeah.
da. Like it was nice as well, which was good. And I did that for a few years, and I sort of was wondering what to do next. And then I remember seeing an ad for a animation pipeline assistant for Happy Feet 2 that was being made in Sydney. It was like 1,000 kilometers away.
Okay.
And I was just looking at the job description. It was just like you don't have to have worked in film or anything like that before, but we just need you to have like an understanding of rigging or an understanding of animation or an understanding of this. And I was just like,
Okay.
oh, I think I've done bits and pieces of that. So yeah, I applied and had a chat, and yeah, they basically brought over, and that was my first sort of exposure to film and TV, which was fantastic. That was a really amazing show to work on and get exposed to. And I was in Animation Pipeline for about 7 years. Yeah. Bouncing back and forth between Melbourne and Sydney in Australia, sort of picking up like again, like another really niche area. So it's not animation, it's not pipeline, it's
Yeah.
animation pipe. So it's the middleman between the two
Yeah.
departments.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I was working at Animalogic for a couple of years. They'd been doing the Lego movies for years, right?
Oh,
And
wow. That's amazing.
yeah,
Cool.
really, really fun studio, a great vibe and everything. And then they built their whole pipeline around these brick films. They were
Yeah.
using Softimage XSI, and they'd been doing this for like 10 years, like
Oh,
these
my God.
developments and stuff. And they wanted to make a creature film. They had the Peter Rabbit film. And they wanted to do this, but they had no tools for it. So they basically did like a full rug pull. This is like a technical development company, basically started their pipeline again. And as part of that, they wanted the creature effects to be sort of driven from like an animation point of view, right? They needed like animation to drive that stuff. They wanted the clothing to have as much characters as the characters themselves, is what they sort
Okay.
of pitched.
Yeah.
And so the small skeleton crew, that what they wanted was someone that understood kind of like the technical limitations of the animation department to help sort of like feed the assets and the workflows into this new creature effects department. And that was myself, which I
Yeah.
was very, very lucky for. And then like sitting next to these creature effects guys, I'm like, what is this stuff? Like, what are you doing? How are you doing this? And I spent so much time with them, like sort of 4 or 5 months setting up this sort of how anime and CFX were going to work together. That I my boss, this amazing guy called Simon Bull, was just like, hey, do you want to work over there? Like, do you want to work for the Creature Effects guys? I said, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So I was terrified because I was, retraining and joining as a junior artist and stuff, but everything I'd done before had some place, right? Like in working across, I had this amazing relationship with all the animators, and I realized like how important it was for other, like for the creature effects guys to go back to animation, like talk to the animators, find out what they're trying to do, what's going to be a problem, what are they trying to keep their eye on, and trying to get that culture going. And I think that really set a strong foundation for moving forward. And I've just been there ever since.
I think you said it like you hit the nail on it says when you said that you created this foundation because you were there. Because I feel that juniors sometimes think that they need to actively like take notes and, you know, actively like plan 4 or 5 years ahead, and it's like, nah, it's just you live in the moment. Yeah. You can see like how the seniors are doing it, and you, because like the work would not have been done otherwise. Like you kind of need to learn that you're counting on other departments too to make the work happen.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like again, like what I've been told that really stuck in my head was like, we're all on the same show. Like, you know, you always get this like weird, like animosity between departments, like, you know, animation hates rigging and CFX hates animation and lighting's just like, ah, CFX, what the hell? But like, we're all on the same team. Everyone's doing everything what they want to the best of their ability. It's just like, of course you're the person that's going to see it when it goes wrong. So it's just, I don't know. It goes so, so well when everyone's on the same page. So well.
Also, and the leadership has to be not just on the same page, but also like very clear communication, I would imagine, on like, because I feel if there was no leadership and you just departments talking to each other, you know, you have 5 channels of communications and this guy blames this person and it just gets dirty real quick. You know, I don't know if you've ever been in a studio, because it seems to me that you've been like working in amazing studios and they all got their stuff together.
Yeah. I mean, no, there's always drama, okay. Right? Yeah, but I think like, yeah, but I think like at the same time, like everyone knows what this is like, right? Like this is the job. It could be frustrating, but it's no one's fault. Like no one's like cackling and rubbing their hands together. Like today I'm going to screw up lighting. Like, you know, like, everyone's doing their best. And that's the only thing. Everyone can only make a decision based on their own experience. I think like, sometimes you get people butting heads, but I mean that's the job as well, you know. So
how's it like to start in a studio like that? Like, how's the hiring process for juniors right now?
For a big studio?
Yeah, for a big studio, yeah.
Do you mean like right now in this environment or just
in this environment, yeah, exactly.
Tough,
okay.
Yeah. Really tough. Yeah. I think like the visual effects industry in the past 18 months, this is the worst I've ever seen it. Like I've only
heard
been doing
it.
This.
But then, no one explained this to me. Like I wish someone.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So basically what happened was COVID originally, right? Like COVID was hard. Everyone got sent home. And the weird thing about COVID is like we were told there was no way anyone could ever work from home. That's what we'd been told beforehand, right? Because it's a security risk. Like you know, oftentimes you need some sort of pass. There's a lot of NDAs that you sign to be able to work on this stuff. All the films and TV shows and everything have code names so that even if you're in a bar, people don't know what you're talking about. Stuff like that. So there's all this secret thing. And then of course COVID happened and it seemed like overnight all the studios could send all the artists home and we could work from home. So it was just like, oh, we can do this. This is quite cool.
Okay.
And so that was bizarre. And then what happened was probably the biggest explosion of work I've ever seen. Like,
okay,
every single person on the planet was at home and paying for subscription media, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Suddenly, like, every single service wanted content. Like, they were desperate for content. And if you could click a mouse, you had a job, I think. Like, I remember, like, junior artists, you know, typically like you'd graduate and kind of like anyone that applied would have a pretty damn good chance of coming in and a really, really good salary. Like,
okay.
It was booming. Like there was a lot of stuff going on. It was great.
Demand is high. Yeah.
Yeah. And then basically like COVID ended and that demand plummeted. It absolutely plummeted.
Yeah.
You know, you had entire streaming services shutting down because they no longer had the subscribers. And then you had right after that, sort of like 9 months after that, 6, 9 months after that, we had the writer's strike in the US.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And suddenly all production grinds to a halt all around the world.
Yeah.
And they went on strike for what, like a year? 9 months or something like that. So while they're on strike, like there is no shooting because basically, like you can't even like ad lib dialogue, I think, legally on a shoot. You can't make up dialogue because technically that's writing. Like,
Oh,
so they
yeah.
banned everything basically.
But didn't the
There was some
actors
content.
also stopped working?
I don't think so. I think it was just
Okay.
the writers, and then it was followed by I'm very, very sorry if you're from these industries. I think it was like the camera guys or the lighting guys
Yeah.
also went on strike afterwards or something like
Okay,
that. So there was, in the US, like a huge amount of work just stopped for nearly a full year.
Wow.
And so you've got projects that are already in progress, right, in visual effects, but like if nothing's being shot, like our work is always starting sort of 2 or 3 months after a shoot, right?
Yeah.
So it sort of stops and then this year goes on. And even when they find another deal and they're like, right, the strike is over, it's just like, well, for the past year, there's been no shooting. So our work is now just going to start hitting as well. So then, of course, like we have like a huge like lack of new content demand, no content really being streamed anyway. And a lot of that money is run out. So you just have like suddenly you've got a lot of people out of work looking for a very small amount of jobs. And I think, yeah, unfortunately, it reminds me a lot of when I first started.
Okay.
And between graduating and my first real job, like quote unquote real job,
Yeah.
like on Happy Feet, was about 4 years. So I really, really, really do feel for people at the moment that are just starting.
But also the people who started in that boom, right? They haven't really, I don't feel, I'm not judging, but the way I'm trying to understand is that if you, like you said, if you click a mouse, you kind of got a job. And so
Right, yeah.
they kind of had this unrealistic approach to the industry, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I was probably like a bit too candid with that, but I think what it did is I think unfortunately it set people up to expect that the industry was going to be one way when it really wasn't. Like, you know, you come in like at baseline and you were just riding this rocket ship like up the top and you just think like, of course, it's the only thing you've ever seen. Like, you know, and you got the studios calling you got other studios like, oh, don't work there, come work for us, like we'll pay you more, we'll do this, we'll do that. And then suddenly like that work all runs out and it's a real slap in the face, I think, because you think like, oh, here I am, I graduated, I did all this work, I'm wanted, I'm needed, and then all of a sudden like
I'm
no
not.
one is calling you. Yeah, you're not. And I think that's been hard. And that's not even, and then of course that's rippled out, right? Like that wasn't just people with a couple of months' experience, it's gone into years of experience.
This
As these
sucks.
studios are shutting down, it's hard. Yeah.
And I would imagine like the extraordinary, like really good people, like good skilled at what they do or what they did during those years, they kept their jobs. The studios got rid of those who were still on their way,
Yeah.
or they need maybe proper coaching or proper leadership. But I don't think in those years, since the demand was so high, that was the focus. Maybe the focus was get as many people as possible. Here's money, throw it at them. Doesn't matter if they learned or not, we're not investing in them. And then at the end, the projects get shipped and then they just throw them out. And
Yeah,
this
I
really
think
sucks.
like, yeah, it sucks. I think unfortunately, that's kind of how the industry is in general. It's just that this time there was no next job to go on to. It just stopped, right? So that's unfortunate,
But
yeah.
that's interesting from your perspective because you've lived before it was like booming, right? In
Yeah,
COVID. So you
yeah.
had that perspective always, like whenever you had the chance to work on a project, you probably made sure that you're getting the best out of it. Like
Oh yeah, absolutely.
networking
Yeah.
wise, the
Yeah.
best.
Yeah, you could see it around the studio, like especially like in Feature Anim, right? That like that's a project that might go for a year or two, right? And the last 6 months of that period is a very strange time because people start either trying to secure their next job at that studio
Oh,
or trying to get
wow.
something next. And it's a little tense, you know, as people try and work it out. And you know, the rule I was going with was that if I had 3 months left on a contract, like I needed to know right then if I was staying. Otherwise, I needed to start looking for another job.
And there's like no shame in that.
No, of course, yeah. That's, I mean, that's if it's all contracted, this is what
Exactly.
happens. Yeah.
Exactly. It's all contracts. And I feel that the film industry or the movie industry had paved a way better way for artists. But the games industry have not been structured that way for some reason. Like, we for a long time we had EA, we had Blizzard, we had like all those big companies, and now slowly you could see that the games industry is pivoting towards hiring contractors, freelancers. Like that's something I've learned last year, for example, is that I better like start getting myself into the freelance industry with one of the skills that I have, because like as you know generalist, it's kind of difficult to sell your skills. But I was offering, like, I know you didn't ask, but like I was offering art tests, like, come on, let's do an art test, not out of desperation, but more out of interest in like in the project that I'm applying to. So I'm a curious person, as you know, you've been on my streams.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love
it. So like I ask, like, what is the art style you're looking for? And they would tell, you know, we were looking for this and that. And I'm like, okay, I'll do an art test. This sounds amazing. And they were like, yeah, sure, go ahead. You know?
Yeah.
And I just do the art test. And last time I did the art test, I got the freelance job. And that was
good.
I'm still busy with that until now.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what happened as well. I think like I had this idea that it was these, you know, VFX studios, and you joined the studio, right? And, but I think the vast majority of it is contract based. And I think as especially over the next couple of years, I think that like taking a more generalist approach, like the people that are at the studios still right now, like we are very, very aware that you have to be able to do a little bit more than what you would have originally been tasked with, right? Like if your boundary is here, you're going to have to be expected to be like that, right? Because it's just, we just don't have the number of people that we wanted to all the time, right? We're in this sort of strange recovery period where we want to be able to get this work done, but we're running very thin margins, right? Like we have to do this like very efficiently, and we have to get holes in one, right? So like you need to be able to sort of like do a lot of this sort of work. I think that seems to be happening across the board in a lot of industries. And I think like, gaming is seeing it pretty heavily.
Yeah. Speaking of which, where do you see a creature, do you see a future for like a CFX real time artist for games?
Yeah, I think so. Like it's something like, it's weird because I would, you know, everyone sort of like back in the day when you're sitting at work late at night doing overtime, don't do overtime, people, you know, you sort of say, oh, if I wasn't here, what would I be doing? And you always sort of like work out like, oh, what could I be doing? Like I spent like a year studying raccoon fur. What the hell do I move into now? But you just sort of like, the first thought is like, oh, games. And then you think like, oh, but hang on, I'm a creature effects artist. Like I spend my whole time sending off simulations. I can't. We can't do that. It's real time. So I kind of put it to one side. But then, like, I don't know, the last couple of years, it's been really impressive what's come through.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, games is, like, right on that precipice, I think, of being quite exciting, because I think I can see, like, you know, you see, like, basic, maybe not even cloth sims, but just, like, cloth behavior or hair behavior or something like that.
Yeah,
and it's moving, right? That's great. But it stops there, right? Like, or it seems to. I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but like what I would love to see, and I think what games is like ready for, I really do believe it, is just like, okay, the sim works, but what are you going to do with it now? Like, you know, again, like if you could imagine the perfect thing in your head, oh, I want it to move this way. Like technology aside, I want it to move in this way. If I was drawing this, what's the one frame it could be to represent what I want? And I could just have it look like that. It's just like, right, that side. That's what we want to do in games now. Like not just, you know, have a sword swishing back and forth or something like that.
It's, you know,
just,
sometimes I wonder like why that is in games. Like, but it's mostly games that are already established in design. So like a game that is proven to have sold like very well.
Or mostly
a nostalgic game that you see like, they're spending a lot of money on like the visuals and on the simulations and things like that. But not so many new games with new concepts get to do all of that. And right now, That's only my opinion. It's my hot take. I feel that we've reached a level in the games industry where the games are getting repetitive. So no matter how much simulation you put on that thing, people are just like, oh, Assassin's Creed, another one. Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I haven't worked in games. I'd like to give it a go, but just as an audience member, I feel the same way. I'm always reminded of, was it the first film that ever played was the French film that was the train coming into a station?
Yeah.
Like it's just an old black and white film, right? And people lost their minds like when that came out. And it was, you know, people lying down the block and for months and months and months this thing played. But then people got over the technology, right?
Yeah.
Like the technology is no longer impressive. It's just, you know, they needed characters and stories and dialogue and, you know,
exactly.
Suddenly all this stuff blossoms. And I really feel like gaming is kind of on that, that same precipice. Like the tech is like, we get it. Like, that's fine. Right. But like, what are you doing with it? Like what's new? Yeah. I'm excited for that.
It's mostly for games. Like, what is the core, right? I feel a movie is like the story. The story is the core.
Yeah.
The characters are the core. Sometimes the effects are the core, even, you know. It could be many different things.
Yeah.
For games, the game better be a game, and it better
have
objective, and those better work. And it's like, even if you have the best visuals, if the game is not doing its thing, like if it's an experience, that becomes an experience. Like for gamers, they don't see it as a game. So like also a game could be, that's what a lot of people like, especially gamers, don't understand or don't see about game design, is that it existed way before video games. Like soccer, basketball, they all have a rule. They all have rules and guides how to play it. There's something that you have to achieve within like a certain time. Those concepts they most like game designers they do their whole design on paper, like on they make like a board game, and once that works and you know that you can do it with like literal cube. Have you seen Sea of Thieves, like the block?
Final. It's so good. You're right though, like if it's fun with a piece of paper, it's fun in a digital game for sure.
That's the beauty of games, is like in theory anybody can make a fun game with any possibilities, and it's like it's one of our oldest forms of like spotting like when humans became humans, you know, in the history.
We used
to play games. We were like one of the only creatures that just play games with rules
for the sake of just games.
Yeah, right? Or you know, there's all types of stuff. There's like sacrifice and religion. It's like it was very weird back in the day. Like
a lot was going on, but games were at the core.
The games were at the core, absolutely. Hey, I wanted to touch on one topic with you, and that is Blender. Blender is getting real hot right now. Especially that it's just open source, and the animated movie that won the Oscar was Flow, right? That's what's called.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful film.
What do you think about that?
I think that's fantastic, right? I think anything that gets like tools in the hands of storytellers is always good, right? Yeah. And like cost, like let's not beat around the bush, right? Like this software is expensive, right?
Yes.
So it is a huge barrier to entry. Go Blender. Like, well done. I think that's great, and like well done for that team as well. It's like, software aside, it's a beautiful project. I think they did really, really well. But I think, I'm a huge like open source campaigner as well. Cool. Like, I think that's amazing. I love like the Blender Foundation, like releasing open source films as well. Like you can grab any of those assets and have a look at those scenes and stuff like that. I think that's great. I'm all for it. Whatever gets people's ideas out of their heads and onto my screen, I'm all for.
But like as an experienced CFX, would you imagine ever yourself being hired by a student that only works with Blender with no prior experience in Blender for you? Would you imagine yourself just feeling comfortable with that?
I think so. I think I've done it before, right? Like pivoting from Anim to CFX, That was awful. Like in switching like Maya brain to Houdini brain, I'm like, what the hell is this software, right? Like what's nice, I had the head of the department at a studio called DNEG, Theo Fasi, really, really, really nice guy. And he was in charge of sort of hiring, and he built this really, really fun creature team, like of riggers and creature effects guys. And he was convinced that it doesn't matter what software you know. Like you can train someone in software in a couple of months. Like,
I
and if you've
agree.
designed the software well, like a couple of weeks. Like, we could have you, Jack, running shots, like CFX shots, in 2 days. Like, I'm
What?
telling you right now. Like,
You want to do that? Let's go.
let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. But like, so the software can always be taught. It's all the other stuff that you can't really, it takes a lot longer to teach, like a lot of soft skills and things like that. And I think all your experience that you may think is irrelevant is completely relevant. Like on Happy Feet, the best story I saw was the designer for the crowds, like the hundreds of penguins that were all over the ice and everything like that, and how they moved and everything like that. The sort of director of all of that information had never worked in film before, never worked in CG. She organized business events. That was her thing. She just understood how crowds of people should behave. And that's it. She was brought in.
That's
Yeah,
awesome.
it's great.
It's like the core skill of that, right? It's still helpful for other
Exactly. It's
jobs.
concepts. Yeah, exactly. You
Oh,
know.
it's so,
Yeah.
so fascinating. Well, listen,
Yeah.
man, Jared, it's been great talking to you. It's been an hour now
My
officially.
pleasure. I love this. This is great.
I think it was very smooth. I'll just upload the video, honestly. Thank you
Great.
for choosing to participate and for showing up on my streams when I used to stream. I was just like always so happy whenever you joined. I was like,
Of
I still
course.
am small streamer, so I was always like, what is this guy doing here?
It's really great. Like I really have to say, like I love what you're doing for the community. Like I love the passion that you've done behind it, and I'm more than happy to support and get the word out. I think you've just done a great job. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and you have a very fascinating story, and now we get to share it with the world.
Sounds great. Thanks very much for having me.
All right, thank you so much.